cards are mixed up, which is fine. I am not mixed up. Thank you, Hashem. And I will start with the Gemara that I wanted to start with. The Gemara Megillah tells us that in the schud, in the merit, in the schus of the tznius that Rachel had, she merited to have Shaul HaMelech descend from her. And in the zechus of the tznius that that Shaul had, he merited to have Esther HaMalka come from him. So that's a direct line. And Rav Henoch Leibowitz, who Zatzal was the Rosh Hashiva of Chavetz Chaim, asked the following question. If we go back to the beginning of the Gemara, Gemara says, "B'schus tznius shehaisa baba Rachel zatzal v'yatza mimena Shaul." In the schus of the tznius of Rachel, she was zocha that Shaul should come from her. And let's go back to the Rachel story. The Rachel story is the story of Rachel giving the signs to her sister. What kind of midos would we say were involved in that story?
Batronus.
Good one. Okay, giving in. Anything else? Humbleness, anivas. Chesed, kindness. Do we find any tznius in this?
David.
Why?
It's
so that is the shiloh that we're asking. That's what we're starting with, okay? What is the tznuanis in the fact that Rachel gave signs to Leah? Why does the Gemara say that it's in the merit of the tznius of Rachel that Shaul comes from her? Maybe you could say the chesed. Maybe we could say the vatranus. Maybe we could say the Kiddush Hashem. I don't know, whatever you want to put in there, but we don't find modesty in here. And the end result is going to be Esther comes from Shaul, and this was of his tznius. We know that Shaul does have incidents of tznius. Does anyone know what they are? He's nichba ala kalim. He hides, he's humble. When he goes to the bathroom, what does he do? He covers himself. So we do have instances of Shaul's being tznua, and we can clearly see that he's tznua. We don't have an instance where we see specifically Rachel being tzanua. We have many other things that Rachel does that are wonderful, and in fact we're told that because of what she did, v'shavu banim l'gvula. But where is the tznius here? And he says something very interesting, which I never thought about until I read this. Rachel, we know, in giving the signs to Leah, was potentially giving up her entire future. She knew that Yaakov was going to be the ancestor of the entire Jewish people, and that marrying him would be her ticket to being the mother of the entire Jewish people, which would be the future of the world, which would be us. Just by the way. And she thought she was giving that up because she didn't want to embarrass her sister. Rav Henoch Leibowitz says she actually had another option. What was her other option? Her other option was a very good option. And with that option, she wouldn't have embarrassed her sister, and she might have still held on to her chance to marry Yaakov. Can anyone think what that option might have been?
They could just both marry him.
Well, that wasn't an option on that night.
Why?
Because Lavan was holding her back, and Leah was being sent to him.
Okay. I take it back.
Take it back. Anything else? What she could have done, usually somebody says when I ask this, is she could have told Yaakov, she could have found him and told him, but clearly we see from the design of the story that it must have been that Lavan was preventing her from going to Yaakov, because she had to tell Leah. Yeah?
She could not
tell Leah. Right, but then Leah would have been embarrassed.
Right.
So we said an option where Leah would not have been embarrassed, and he says what she could have done is she could have told her father, Dad, your game is up. Yaakov and I have secret signals, and you're not going to get away with it. And don't try to bring Leah there, because she's just going to be embarrassed, so don't even try. And Rav Henoch says that, why didn't you do that? And the answer he gives is a hard one to swallow, so I'm going to let you swallow it slowly. that Lavan was known to be a very non-discreet person. He was known to be a person who blabbed, and he had the whole town already there for a party. And if she would have told him that she had secret signs with Yaakov, he would have gone out there and said, "Everybody, party's off! Rachel has secret signs with Yaakov. We can't move forward." The modesty of Rachel is that she didn't want something private between her and Yaakov told to everyone. That is the modesty of Rachel. The modesty of Rachel is that she had something private between herself and Yaakov, and she didn't want everybody talking about it. She didn't want it out there for everybody to talk about. And if we follow the chain down, we say that who descends from Rachel? We said Shaul. Who then descends from Shaul? Esther. What's Esther's midah? Esther doesn't tell. But Esther lo omeres. Esther doesn't tell. She doesn't say who she is. She doesn't reveal. So this midah of Rachel, of keeping things quiet, this ends up being the same midah of Esther not telling. And that is one of the biggest challenges of the world we live in today, where everything is let everybody know and let's tell. So that is our discussion of today. And I'd like to start with the very wonderful potential curse that ended up being a bracha that Bilam HaRasha gave to the Jewish people in Bamidbar Chaf Daled Hey. We say it when we begin our davening in the morning. We say the words of Bilam, Ma tovu ohalecha Yaakov, mishkenosecha Yisrael. How good are your tents, Yaakov, the sanctuaries of Israel. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Baba Basra, Sherash v'schehem she'ena mechuvanim zem ol zeh. What did he see? What did Bilam see when he was looking down over the Jewish people? He saw that the openings of their tents did not face one another. And he said, Ma tovu. This is so good. The Gemara learns in Baba Basra based on this. Lo yiftach adam l'chatzer hashutfim. Petach keneged petach v'chalon keneged chalon. That the halacha is that when Jewish people are building homes, they should not have one door facing the other person's door. They should not have one person's window facing the other person's window. Basically, our way of life is not knowing everybody else's business. That is the way of the Jewish people. What is the way of the world? So I just brought a few statistics with me. I printed this out about a month and a half ago, so the statistics may have changed, but not that much. WhatsApp has 1.5 billion users from 180 countries. That makes it the most popular instant messaging app worldwide. 29 million messages sent every million minutes. Brazil has 120 million WhatsApp users. Unexpectedly, the U.S. market has fewer shares with 23 million users only. 20 million messages sent every minute, while daily WhatsApp messages exceed 65 billion. WhatsApp video and voice calls consume 2 billion minutes daily. So much for privacy in the world at large. One of my favorite stories that actually happened to me, just to understand where the world is at when it comes to privacy, and I'm gonna pull this into something I'm gonna mention a little later when I get my cards in order, but they're still not. The manicure shops typically show talk shows. You know what I'm talking about? So this was the talk show. I don't know what it was called. I saw this a while back. It had some movie star that was on the talk show, and I witnessed this, so I saw it. I didn't know him. Very proud not to know him, who he was. And this was the game they played. They put him against one of his fans, and the question was, anyone want to guess? Who knew more about him faster? She won. Okay, this is where privacy has gone in our world. I want to share with you so much for organized cards. I think there's still more in my pocketbook, but we'll find what I'm looking for in a moment, because this one is on a back. There is a fantastic Kliyakar on the Pasuk in Devarim Beis Gimel. Klal Yisrael is traveling in the desert. It's in Devarim. And we're recounting their travel. Hashem said to them, Rav lachem soha harazeh, pnu lachem tzafona. You've been going around the mountain enough, turn north. I think I'm using this board today. Tzafona is north. They're told to turn north. The mountain they were going all around was called Har Seir, which was the mountain of whom? Esav. Okay, and they're told, Rav lachem soha harazeh, it's enough going around this har, pnu lachem tzafona, go north. Kliyakar emphasizes that in the word tzafona, what do we have? Tzafun. What is tzafun?
Hidden.
Hidden. And he takes one particular angle there in the Kliyakar, and we're going to expand from that Kliyakar. We said they're going around Har Seir. They're going around the mountain of Seir. And he says there, Esav hates you enough already. From the beginning of time of the history of Yaakov and Esav, the complaint of Esav against Yaakov is, you stole my bechorah, you stole my birthright, you stole my legacy. So he's always looking at us, you stole. Pnu lachem tzafona. Stop showing off in front of him. He doesn't need to see what you have, writes the Kliyakar. The Kliyakar was a Talmud of the, now I just forgot, I think of the Maharal. Writes the Kliyakar, not the Maharal. That's too far back in time. I'm blanking on that at the moment. And the Kliyakar writes, a person who has 1,000 makes it look like they have 10,000. A person who has 10,000 makes it look like they have 100,000. Why? Why show it off? The Goyim hate you already. Why are you showing it off? Keep yourself hidden. I recently got a memoir of a Holocaust survivor who's in our neighborhood. Unfortunately, once I read her memoir, I was very, very interested in meeting her. And I was told by her grandchildren that she's no longer coherent, which is just so very sad. But she writes in there that she was from a very wealthy family in Europe, and her father went on business and brought her and her sisters fox stoles, which I guess are like big scarf-type things that you wear around yourself. And you know what he told them? Wear it in the house. Don't wear it outside. Pnu lachem tzafona. Go to a place that's hidden. Find the hiddenness. And I would like to say, yes, we could talk a lot about not flashing what we have in front of Esav. But I think we have an even greater theme that I want to talk about today. The Gemara in Baba Metzria says the following. Amar Rav Yitzchak. Ein habracha mitzuya Ella b'davor shesamoy min ha'ayin. Anytime the Gemara has ein and ella means, anyone know those two? There only is bracha find. Ein ha'bracha mitzuya, ella. Bracha is only found b'davor hasamoy min ha'ayin. The things that are hidden from the eye. There will only be blessing in things that are hidden from the eye. And the Maharsha says, why is that? Because it wards off ayin hara, and it wards off jealousy. And jealousy is a very, very real thing that we have. In fact, somebody told me this, and this is a Dvar Torah you can take into next Shabbos, because we're on the precipice of the Parsha of, what's coming? That's right, which is our big Ten Commandments. And the Gemara says that with every commandment, which is a fantastic idea, each commandment? Mitmalei ha'olam b'samim. The whole world filled up with amazing smelling spices. And then you know what happened? Before the next commandment, a big wind came and blew it away. Side point of this is that Matan Torah was a full body experience. It was all the senses. So we saw, we heard, each dibra had a smell. Anochi Hashem Elokecha came with a wind and a smell. A reach nichoach, a beautiful smell, blew away. Lo yiyeh lecha. You know which one smell never blew away? The last one, what's that? Lo tachmo, don't covet. Jealousy is very real. It's a real thing. Ein habracha mitzuya ela badavar shesamoy min ha'ayin. There is only bracha in things that are kept hidden, that nobody knows. I just love quoting this from a woman from our shul. She should be well and live on Mayav Esrim and enjoy all her nachas. And I heard that she had another great-grandchild. And typically, I don't know how it works in your shuls, we have announcements every week. Mazel tov to so-and-so on their so-and-so, mazel tov to so-and-so on their so-and-so. You know what I'm talking about? And I said to her, Mrs. Vader, we didn't announce your mazel tov. She said to me, if I have a simcha, the Eibishter knows I have a simcha. My husband knows I have a simcha. My family knows I have a simcha. Not everybody else has simchas. Why do I need to announce it? What a beautiful attitude. What a beautiful attitude. Nubachem safona. Ein habracha mitzuya ela badavar shesamoy min ha'ayin. And that is a bracha in all aspects of life. One of the most fantastic messages of this is from Malachim, where Elisha brings the son of the Isha HaShunami to life. So he has this, somebody told me recently a story of a gadol, that they say a gadol story who brought somebody back to life. I said, so far I only know that Eliyahu and Elisha did it. Maybe somebody else did too, but anyway, her son dies after she has helped out Elisha, and he's going to try to put him back to life. And he tells her, "Skor es hadeles," close the door. And we learn from here, the Torah Chaim says, that a nes is not going to happen unless the door is closed. That there is something about privacy that is so integral in our lives. Close the door. I was inspired to prepare this year, actually from an experience I had with my very own home. We bought our house that we're living in Far Rockaway. I think this is our 8th year in that house. Our 12th year in Far Rockaway. Might be our 9th year in that house. Anyway, the house cost enough money, it was in pretty much move-in state, and we didn't really have much at that point in time to invest in changing things we might have wanted to change. One of the things that really attracted me most to the house is that we face north, and I don't know if any of you know what that means in New York City. We get the morning sunshine. So the house fills with light in the morning, which is really, really nice. It also means two other things. Nothing in this winter because we didn't have any snow, but my snow melts faster than the other side of the street. And my grass is not as green as the other side of the street because we get the direct morning sunlight, which is really beautiful. The woman who sold us the house must have had that in mind when she purchased a very, very expensive and fancy door that had in it a huge oblong beveled with a little decoration, but completely see-through window, which meant that if you were standing by my door, what could you do? See inside my house. And it was bothersome, but it wasn't something we were going to deal with. And and as time moved on, it bothered us more and more, but we weren't going to deal with it. And then it got to a point, and I think that was about 3 or 4 years ago, that I had more than one incident, nothing terribly frightening, don't worry, but where it was very uncomfortable that somebody was seeing into my house. And I decided that I wanted to change the door. We went through a lot of grief with this door because I wanted to just get a new door, but it turns out it was a custom height and it was a very expensive door, and blah, 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 blah. And finally, the guy, he should be blessed, which just shows what kind of a businessman he is. He says, you know what, Mrs. Feiner, I'm really telling you the truth. You could just get a film to put on the back of the glass, and then nobody will be able to see through. Call up Long Island Glass and Film, and they'll come. They came. It took them about 5 minutes to put a nice, smooth piece of film on the back of my glass. And then they told me to go outside and test it, and I did. And guess what? You couldn't see in. And when I got back inside and the guys had left, I just called out, Ma tovu alecha Yaakov Mishkano Sefa Yisrael. How good this is! Nobody can see into my house anymore! I love this feeling that nobody can see into my house. This is wonderful! Where is our Jewish people at today? Well. One of my trips on the train here, I was sitting behind two guys from Camp Simcha. I work in Camp Simcha in the summers. And as we're going on the train, they saw that I was behind them. They call out, Rebbe Feiner, guess what? So-and-so is engaged. And I said, how do you know? They said, we just got it on our WhatsApp. And they showed me a picture. And I called so-and-so because he had been my son's counselor. And I said, Mazel Tov, so-and-so, I heard you're engaged. He said, how do you know? I said, I already saw the picture. Ma tovu alecha Yaakov mishkanosecha Yisrael. How great that is. You know what? I want to share with you something very, very personal. Guess who the first person I spoke to after I got engaged to my husband 24 and a half years ago was? I heard Mom. Hashem, maybe.
Your husband.
Him! And guess what? I had a full, he proposed on the Long Island Boardwalk. I'm from Riverdale. I had a full 50-minute drive home. The only person I talked to after I got engaged was the man I got engaged to. Could you imagine? The first 50 minutes of engagement was spent together, just us. I had, actually, this is just a beautiful story, and then we'll get back to our Torah, but the stories are good too. As I mentioned, I have a special needs son, and actually the nurse that takes him to school every day today started out as a volunteer in 10th grade coming to play with him. And she volunteered with him in 10th grade and in 11th grade and 12th grade. When she was in Israel for the year, she called every week to wish him good Shabbos. She came back, and when she was in college, she started coming every Shabbos to play with him. And when she was dating her husband, he decided that he wanted to propose to her in a way that was really special for her, and something that she would be something that would be memorable to her through a means that was very uniquely special to her. And he thought to propose to her on Shabbos in my house while she was playing with my son. He came up with the whole thing, and he proposed in my house on Shabbos. And after he proposed, we knew he was going to be doing it, and he surprised her. He came to my house before she got there. He was hiding, whatever it was. Who was in the room? My son and the nurse. And and then my husband came down, and we had a little l'chaim with them. And I turned to them, and they're married now for 4 years. It'll be 4 years in a couple of months, like next month. And I turned to them, so this is a contemporary couple, and I said, don't you feel bad that, like, you can't take any pictures or call anybody? And they said, you know, actually, this feels nice. This is nice. I mentioned this to her recently, and I said, and then you walked home together. She said, no, actually, I walked him to Mincha. But the flip side is, I know somebody who is a very public person who lost her husband on the first day of a two-day yontif. And she said to me that it was very comforting. Their family was all in the hospital, and they weren't swarmed by other people. Like, they had a little bit of time to just mourn by themselves before everybody else came in. And we live in a world that so doesn't even relate to that aspect of just privacy, that people deserve privacy. And I want to go back to what Rav Hirsch says about these psukim of Matovu Ahalecha Yaakov Mishkanosecha Yisrael. And if I could find my Rav Hirsch card, which might still be in my... but I know what he says. So Rav Hirsch says that Bilam uses a very interesting term. If he wanted to say that the tents of Israel looked very nice, what should he have said? Ma? Ma yafe. How nice looking are the tents of Israel? What does he say? Ma tovu. Tovu means qualitatively good. There is a goodness in this. There is something that is valuable and enduring in this that I can appreciate is a standard that I think is good. Says Rav Hirsch, and somehow that card did not make it into the pile. Maybe it did. No. That Bilam HaRasha is standing in a place called Peor. He is standing on the Har Peor. He is standing on the mountain of Peor. And he is representing Balak and the people who served Peor. If you're familiar with service of Peor, anybody? Any hands here familiar with how they served the Baal Peor? One, two, three, maybe? It was called defecation for deification. Imagine that to be whatever you would like to imagine that to be. But it was exposing your most animalistic side to the idol to show that your animalistic side relates to your spiritual side and that it is really all one and the same, and therefore you can expose everything in this world. And he's standing al pnei Peor, and he's looking down at these people, and he's coming from the most dirty place. The Lev Eliyahu says, Shehara'a pitcheyem shel olaleyem shel Yisrael, when he saw the openings of the tents of Israel, hitchil lihitna'er, he started to shake, mirov tumato. He was so dirty, he was coming from such a place of Peor, he started to shake when he saw how beautiful the sanctity of the tents of Yaakov was. When he saw how precious that there was sanctity still in this world. Do you realize we are living in that kind of contrast today? We are living completely in that kind of contrast today, where there is absolutely a complete and total world of Peor, where everything vulgar is meant to be flashed and is meant to be shared and is meant to be exposed. And we still say we have something we call Kiddusha. Holy. And anything that is Kiddusha is not seen and it's quiet. The holiest place in the world was called the Kodesh Tashim, the Holy of Holies. You know what happened there? One person went in once a year. That's Kiddusha. That's Kedusha. Anything that was given to the Mikdash that nobody else was supposed to touch, so if somebody donated something to the Mikdash that didn't belong to anybody else and nobody else should touch or use, was called Hekdesh. Not for anybody else. Sanctified. Says Rav Hirsch, the sanctity of Klal Yisrael, what Bilam actually saw, what he actually saw, which is fascinating, and I had his words on a card which disappeared into the land of disappearing cards, is that he saw how the Jewish people were encamped. Not only were not the were their tents not facing, the openings of their tents not facing one another, they were camped tribe by tribe. They were camped family by family. Each encampment with brooks running through it, going to the central brook, which was the Mishkan. Says Rav Hirsch, the sanctity that Bilam saw was the sanctity of Jewish family life. You know, back in the day, they didn't have like a blood test that you could take for paternity. And if women got pregnant and nobody knew who they got pregnant from, there were a lot of children running around who didn't know who their fathers were. The Jewish people lived in very clear encampments, he said, based on patrilineal descent. They guarded their family life. They kept that sanctity very clear. This is my home, my family. And when a man marries a woman, what does he say? Hare at mikudesh etli. You are hekdesh to me. That means you don't, we have an exclusivity here that is 100% me and you and nobody else. This is our family, our line. That is the secret of the Tov of Yaakov. And he says that the sanctity of the Tov of Yaakov immunizes us against the vulgarity that is Pa'or. Pa'or is vulgarity. Pa'or, in our world, is blogs. Pa'or is somebody who posts every aspect of their love life, their sexual life, and everything else that's going on, and everybody can know, and everybody should know. That is Pa'or today. That is the world of Pa'or today. What did we start off with? Rachel says, I don't want anybody to know. I want to keep it quiet. And I want to share with you again the example that I gave from the TV star based on the Mishnah and Avos that says, Negid Shema, Avad Shema. The more well-known you become, you know what happens to you? You lose your name. You lose who you are. You lose your individuality. You lose your privacy. Privacy is the matzovu. It is the goodness of Klal Yisrael. It is the shh. Nobody knows. Meretz Hashem, at the time comes and you all learn the mitzvos that are relevant to Taharat HaMishpacha, you're going to learn that when it comes to a woman going to the mikvah, she's supposed to lie rather than tell somebody else where she's going. Because the kedusha of the tents of Yaakov is our intimacy and our intimate life is nobody's business. It's nobody's business. That is the beauty of Klal Yisrael, which is, wow, so different than the world we're living in. And if we go back to just, even just keeping things private and keeping things quiet, and not everybody needs to know, just to keep the bracha. Keep bracha in our families. Keep bracha in our lives. And the example that I like to give, and then I'll go back to Negid Shema Avad Shema, that is a little bit that my cards got out of order. But the example that I like to give, which is a very real one, I think, in our families, is most of us here have siblings. I would assume, Baruch Hashem. As siblings get up, move on and grow up in life, the stage that I'm at, Baruch Hashem, all myself and my husband's siblings are married, and everybody should stay happy and well and married. What develops in families, which will happen, is some families have more hatzlacha in some areas than others. Isn't that a reality? Be it in parnasa, be it in their children, whatever may be. But the example I like to give, which is a very real one, sister number one has a husband who is making it rich, and they go on vacations all the time. Apparently this past winter vacation, what I was informed was, it was the nobodies who went to Florida. Because if you really have money, then you have to go someplace better. They've done nothing. So they're wherever they are, and in from that place where they are, you know what they're doing on the family chat? They're sending pictures every day, right? How does Sister Y, we'll call Sister A, Chana had a Sister Y, his Batya, whose husband has been out of a job for the last 6 months. How does she feel, how does Batya feel every time that picture comes in? What might she feel? What? She might feel jealous. If she doesn't feel jealous, what is she feeling? What?
Sad.
She's maybe feeling sad, or maybe she's feeling, I'm angry at myself because I don't want to feel jealous. I don't want to feel jealous. I want to look at this and I want to be happy for my sister, but I'm not. So I shared this once with the class, and maybe somebody is thinking this right now, where one of the students raised their hand and said, but why can't we just all be happy for each other? Was anybody thinking that? You don't know. You're not telling me. Was anybody thinking that? Maybe, maybe not. The reality is, these are real emotions. You were thinking that? Yeah,
I wish that was the reality.
Right, we wish that was reality, but you know what I said to this person, and I think it's really true. We have enough that's hard in life. We have enough that's hard. Hashem has made life hard for a lot of people in a lot of different ways. The example that I think is very real, which we all know and we all encounter it, how many times have we gone to wedding of sister number two before sister number one? Experienced that? Right? Right now, sister number four just got engaged before sister number one. So whatever that might be, that happens. And sister number four needs to go, sister number one needs to go to sister number four's wedding. And what does she need to do? She needs to smile and look happy and be good. And if she's sad, put it away and make her sister happy and not make her parents cry. And my answer to that is, there's enough that Hashem makes hard. Why do we have to make things hard and like shove it in people's faces? This is the reality of the world that we're living. And there's so much of that Instagram, WhatsApp world that all it's doing is making people feel bad and sad about their lives. It's actually about inbreeding kinah on a grand basis. I read a quote online, and I don't have it down here right now. Months ago, I'd come up with a Facebook contest that was done, I think, in the summer of 2017. It was a best marriage contest. And it was, people would post their experiences and their pictures and what they went through to show who has the happiest marriage. And somebody posted based on that, this is not a Jewish quote, this is just a general quote. People post generally about 3% of the best of their pictures. Isn't that true? Right? We take 20 pictures and maybe we pick one, and that's when we post the one that's best. And the people who see the pictures compare it to 100% of their lives. So that it is a society that's inbreeding pettiness and jealousy and sadness and bad feeling. And we have to come back and we have to say, Esther, shh, don't tell. Not everybody needs to know everything. Not everyone belongs to everyone. So now I get to Negid Shemei Ba'avad Shema. You get famous, you have no name. So I think the example that I gave earlier in the class really, really talks about that. So when somebody's famous, everybody knows everything about them. I have had, in the last year, twice people tell me, as a Rebbetzin, your husband is Rishus Harabim. Do you know what that means? Everybody? Anybody? Public property. He is a Rav, so he belongs to everybody. Nobody is public property. That's not true. And I read a very fascinating article that really explained this concept that I feel I can just share with you. And I gave this class actually in Washington Heights last year. Rebbetzin Schachter came over to me and she said, it's so, so true. She said about like Rabbanim being treated like public property. She says very often she can be eating and maybe she wouldn't want me to share this, but it happens to me too, that I'm walking with my husband home from shul, and all of a sudden, somebody else is walking with him, and I'm walking by myself. And an article that I read that really hones in on what's going on in this rabbis being public property thing goes back to Negid Shemei Vavad Shema. It's something very interesting to think about. I read an article by Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky, whose grandfather, Rav Yaakov, was one of the great Gedolim of yesteryear, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. And he talks about how he went to a big convention with his grandfather, and he has memories of, I think it was an Aguda convention, he has memories of being at the convention with his grandparents, and he says there was a big public dining room, and in this public dining room, they actually had private tables for all the rabbis. Each one sat with his wife at their own table. So Rav Moshe Feinstein was with his wife at his table. Rav Aaron Kotler was with his wife at his table. Each one sitting at his own table. He said at that point in time in history, he didn't find anything strange about it. But in retrospect, what was fascinating is that absolutely nobody interrupted them. I've been invited to the Aguda convention a few times over the last years with my husband, and I have to tell you what they do for the rabbis so that they can eat their meals in privacy. They give us a separate dining room, they close the door, and they have somebody stand by the door most of the time so that other people don't come in. So he writes, this is his postulation, why does he think things have changed from 40 years ago when nobody interrupted rabbis? Nobody would ever start walking with a rabbi when he was walking with his own wife and just pretend the wife wasn't there. And he says the following. He says he believes it is connected to the way celebrities are treated in this world. The fact is, we know that celebrities cannot walk out of their doors without being accosted by people. Isn't that true? And that the Jewish people, in turn, has taken that attitude and passed it on to their rabbis, so that they don't deserve any privacy either, because famous people don't deserve privacy, and that's really Negid Shemei Avad Shema. The more famous you become, the less privacy you have. This is a real true story that I will share with you. Somebody from my shul's niece married one of the Rosh Yeshiva in the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. It was a second marriage for both of them, and at the wedding, they were told, the family was asked not to take pictures because they were afraid of things being posted. And this was told to me by the grandmother of the Kala. She said, so we didn't take any pictures, and the next day it was posted on Matzav and Yeshiva World News. We didn't take pictures, somebody else did and posted it. So that everybody's public property. None of us know where we are, what we're doing. Anybody can, what can they do? Anywhere we are? What can anybody do? Take a picture of us. And go everywhere. You can go everywhere. There's no such thing as privacy anymore. I always laugh if you've ever learned any of these stories of the old-time Hasidish Rebbes who wanted to go anonymous for a day. What would they do? Anyone know? If they wanted to go anonymous for a day, they wanted to travel or go into exile.
They'd dress like a
pauper and they'd go to another town and nobody would know who they were. That doesn't work anymore. Your face is everywhere. Everybody can find you. It's over. Privacy in this world, it's something that we have to grab. We have to grab so carefully, so hold on to it so tight. It's something as Klal Yisrael that we have to just watch. Not everybody needs to know. Not everybody needs to know. Now, on the flip side, that doesn't mean that when we have a simcha, we shouldn't share it with other people. Hopefully, we do want simcha shared. But, you know, the example that I say is, when that simcha happens, think about who you're sending it to, and don't just press send all. Not everybody's going to feel good from seeing it. So don't just press all. Not everybody needs to know. that I'm allowed to guard things in my life, and not everybody should see, and not everybody needs to see, and not everybody needs to hear, and not everybody needs to know. That's the Matovu Alacha Yaakov Mishkenosecha Yisrael. There's a fascinating Gemara in Sanhedrin that says, Amar Rav Abba Bar Kahana Kulan. Oh no, this is not the one I wanted. Let me find it. If I don't have it here, it's here. Thank you. It's the Gemara in Baba Kama Chaf Aleph. It's Rav Huna this time. Rav Huna says, Hadar b'chatzar chaveiro shelo midato ein tzarech la'alot lo schar. This is a very interesting halacha. If you live in your friend's courtyard and you don't pay him rent, you don't need to pay him anything. You've learned this one? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah? Why?
Why?
Why? Why don't you have to pay rent if you're living in the courtyard of your friend?
I don't know, but a bunch of kids did it to one of the principals of SAR.
Oh, yeah?
He, like, pitched a tent in his backyard after learning this.
Really?
Well, he couldn't do anything about it.
Because they were living in his courtyard.
Yeah.
So the Gemara says, what's the reason Rashi says, Shenemar, the pasuk says in Yeshaya, Ushi'iya yukat sha'ar. That Shi'iya, desertion, yukat has hits the gate. Very interesting, Gemara. Rashi says, Yesh shei cheshmo Shi'iya. There's actually a demon that's name is Shi'iya, and it hangs out by gates. So I'm not here to talk to you about demons, even though that does sound like a very interesting discussion. But in a figurative term, gates is a place that Rashi says, "V'tala churban habayis b'sha'ar." Destruction in homes begins by the gates. So that Rashi explains basically here, and the Maharsha, I'm sorry, explains here, that if you're in somebody's gate and destruction can be by the gate, the fact that you're by the gate is what are you doing for them? Let's go back in time. Let's think, okay? Let's wake up. Destruction can happen by the gate. So now you're occupying the space by the gate, and they don't even know about it, but you don't have to pay their rent. So you've become a shomer. You're watching their gate. They didn't hire you to do so, but you're by the gate to make sure that no demons come in. Therefore, the Gemara says you don't have to pay. What's the point here? That the Gemara says in Sota, Matchil Churba Vasifa. Destruction begins at the opening to the home. Which, of course, this is talking about a literal halachic destruction that talks about demons coming in. But I think we can take it down to our personal lives. Destruction begins when everything in my home is open. When I don't have a gate protecting. It's true. Good fences make good neighbors. We do have doors. We have doors and windows and blinds. And there's time to open them and there's time to close. There's time to decide what comes in and there's time to decide what goes out. And not everybody needs to see and not everybody needs to be instantly knows. A very frightening story that I heard, just in terms of the idea of just guarding my privacy and my right to guard my privacy, that I have a right not to have everybody know. Actually happened to a friend of mine who's a dental hygienist, and she was cleaning the teeth of, I think, a like 9-year-old boy who had moved to America from another country. Don't want to give too many details. I'll tell you why in a second. And he had moved to another country because his little sister had cancer. And she's cleaning his mouth, and if you've ever been to the dental hygienist, you know that when they're cleaning your mouth, they're also trying to talk to you and you can't respond. You know what I'm talking about, right? And she's asking him this and that and school and friends and blah, 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 blah. And then she says to him, and why did you move from, let's say, Venezuela? And he says, none of your business. Basically, this 9-year-old boy was sick of telling people that, fill in the blank, his sister was sick. So what actually happened was, I told this story in Camp Simcha, not thinking at the time that his little sister was in camp when I was telling this story. And I mentioned the real name of the country that they moved from, which is not a typical place for people to be from, which meant that what did I actually do in my discussion of privacy?
You're Megala the Sioux.
I gave away the whole story of who I was telling the story about and what happened to his brother it was. Because all the girls said, let's say the girl's name was Cindy. Oh my gosh, it's Cindy! And I'm like, oh my gosh, and I'm talking about privacy. When Cindy's mother came to pick her up from camp, I went over to her and I said, please, 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 I need to ask Mechila from your son. And I told her what happened. I told her how my friend is the dental hygienist and I heard this story. And I totally didn't even connect to that it was her daughter at the time when I heard the story and blah, 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 blah. She said, my son would be so happy if you perpetuate this story. He would be thankful. Not everybody needs to know everybody else's business. Of course, we can be more artful than a 9-year-old boy. But it's appropriate to say, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to share. I don't need to know. Please don't take a picture. This is not something I want posted. Whatever it might be, that I can guard in my life, my privacy. Again, in an ideal world, we're all really happy for each other. Even so, we have this concept of Kedusha. Kedusha means not everybody needs to know. And Halavai, again, we can't, to a certain element and to a certain degree, we can't protect ourselves from this world. We really can't. By the time we get to being working professionals in the world out there, you put your name into Google, you know what's going to come out? So much about you. Already at this point, I don't know how many people Google themselves. Come on, come on. We have. Like we're there, we're not there. What comes up? Where comes up? Who comes up? And this is the world we're in. We're in a world where privacy is nil, where Big Brother truly is always watching us and taking pictures of us. And wherever we go, it's being recorded and it's being taken pictures. And the Chafetz Chaim says it's the greatest lesson to what's going to happen. And we get to that world of truth and it's all going to be played right back to us. But at least for myself, in my life, if I can make small choices to guard my privacy, to know that that is the Midah of Rachel Imenu, that was the Midah of Esther Hamalka. The Midah was, not everything needs to be told. Not everything needs to be known. And that's going to bring bracha in my life. That's going to bring peacefulness into my life. That's going to bring a serenity in my life that nothing else can bring. When I own my life, when it's mine, and what's going on in my family is mine. And that doesn't mean, daiga b'lev ish, you have something going on. You do share, but you don't need to share with all. The pressing the all. You have a simcha in your life, you want to share, we want to be happy for one another. But be careful how the news is delivered to everyone. Be sensitive to those who are going through hard times. And this is, I think, in the year 2020, this is one of the greatest challenges we're dealing with ever. So it should be with bracha and hatzlacha. Everybody should figure out for themselves where they can tweak this just a little bit, just a little bit, to just protect that privacy and keep the sanity. Truly, this is a sanity in an absolutely insane world. So bracha and hatzlacha. And for those of you who came in late, I live in Far Rockaway. My husband's